Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond reading with you today the Herald and Review from Decatur. It is August 23rd, 2016. We'll begin with an article concerning government and politics on the front page. The headline is Sediment Basin Work Wraps Up, and it was written by Allison Petty. Anyone driving across Lake Decatur on Lost Bridge Road can see the dredge working to remove sediment from the lake. Two smaller dredges are also being assembled in the Sand Creek area near Grove Road. Crews from Great Lakes Dredge and Dock, the city's contractor on this $91 million job, used the machines to remove the sediment that has collected on the lake bottom, ultimately increasing the lake's capacity. But where does the sediment go? That's harder for the average resident to see. Once sediment is dislodged, it travels for miles through pipes that are mostly located on the lake bottom. Booster pumps along the way make sure that it keeps going all the way to a 523-acre site off Angle Crossing Road in Oakley. There, workers from subcontractor Terra Contracting Services have been working for more than 2 years to make sure the site can hold all the additional sediment that will be removed over the course of the six-year project. They're wrapping up now, said Jerry Stevens, Engineering Services Coordinator for the City of Decatur. The crews began working at the site in February 2014 and have experienced numerous delays because of wet weather that made earthwork impossible. Their task involved digging beneath the wet silt left from previous dredging efforts to find sturdier clay material, which they used to raise the berms around the site by 10 feet. They also raised the berms that separate different cells within the basin. The berms were tested to ensure that they met certain compaction standards, as the site ultimately must hold millions of gallons of wet sediment. The cells help filter sediment from the water that comes in with it, allowing the water ultimately to flow back to Lake Decatur, Stevens said. Quote, when the sediment comes in, it's 85% water, 15% sediment. Then, as it sits there, the sediment can settle out, just like it did in the lake, Stevens said. The clearer water stays on top. Then it goes into another cell. If there's more sediment that needs to be taken out, then it stays there. Quote, it doesn't really flow real fast. It sits here for a long time to let it all settle out. After flowing through several cells and weirs, that's W-E-I-R-S, weirs, the water goes into a drainage ditch and then back into the lake. Stephen said it is regularly tested for total suspended solids, and the water flowing back in is clearer than the water in the lake now. Quote, we're just taking the very clearest water off the top, he said. Crews from Terra have seeded the sides of the berms to stabilize them. From the road outside, they look like sides of a steep hill. Within their boundaries, some areas look like a miniature lake, while others are more marshy and overgrown with plants. Ducks and other wildlife like the basin, Stevens said. Dredging is expected to begin in the Sand Creek area later this summer, and it is ongoing in Basin 2. All the pipes will be removed from the bottom of the lake once the project is complete, Stephen said. Nothing is going to be left in the lake, he said. Two photographs accompany this article. One shows Engineering Services Coordinator Jerry Stevens wearing a hard hat, who is pictured next to a finishing pond while giving a tour of the Oakley Sediment Basin. It has a rather marshy look to me. Then there's a picture of a very strange-looking machine that has a kind of a chute out of which dark material is being forced. And the headline reads, "Water and sediment from Lake Decatur is pumped into the Oakley Sediment Basin." The next photo shows Canada geese, who are among the wildlife that can be found at the Oakley Sediment Basin. There's also a picture of a some kind of a plow. It's a construction machine as workers put final grading on the berm at the Oakley Sediment Basin. And then there's another position, another photograph of Lieberman Noe Flores, who's preparing to reposition a dredge pipe while working next to rolls of seed and straw to be planted to help stabilize the burn at the Oakley Sediment Basin. So that's quite a series of pictures that help to explain what's happening at Lake Decatur. We turn now to page 3 for an article about Macon County. The headline is, "Layoffs continue to be possibility in future county budget." This article was written by Ryan Voiles. If a primary election does occur next year, Macon County Clerk Steve Bean said his office may have to lay off one or two staff members. Bean's presentation of his department's budget helped to highlight the financial situation of the county Monday night as it held the second meeting in its three-month-long budgeting process. The process gives board members a chance to analyze and make recommendations on the various departments' budget proposals for the new fiscal year, which begins December 1st. Monday's meeting saw proposals from officials in the circuit court, in the circuit clerk, state's attorney, county clerk, and the University of Illinois Extension offices. Department heads were asked to cut their budget up to 7% for the coming fiscal year, with a goal to reduce overall general fund expenses by $1.57 million. The county clerk's office is cutting its overall budget by $79,000, and Bean echoed other department heads when he cited a loss in state revenues. Part of the cuts have included the consolidation of precincts and polling locations, which have dropped off by dozens over the past decades. His budget does not factor in a city primary, which occurs when more than 5 people run for mayor and more than 13 run for city council. If a primary does occur, then cuts to staff would likely occur. That could leave the office in a precarious situation, as any reduction to staff in the clerk's or recorder's office would require fees to be lowered as well. In other budget, the state's attorney presented a budget that cut more than $133,000 from their current budget. One topic specifically focused on grant money not fully received from the state to cover the health insurance expenses for child support employees. The grant money, which totals $292,000, is only partially given to the county. Quote, "We have this situation where we're supposed to be getting this money from the state," said Assistant State's Attorney Michael Baggett. "We have a contractual agreement with them to get the money, but they disagree with us about our cost allocation, and they have the right to withhold money." After the meeting, Finance Committee Chairman Jay Dunn said it is an issue the board will investigate, likely in next year's budget discussion. Budget meetings will continue into October. But so far, Dunn said the process has gone smoothly, despite the rocky subject. "I think it's going good. The office holders have met their budget requirement, and I know it's been painful," he said. Also on page 3, we find this headline, "Semi-tractor car crash kills man." An 84-year-old Forsyth man was killed in a crash between a semi-tractor trailer and a passenger car on Illinois 121 between Decatur and Warrensburg on Monday, according to the Macon County Sheriff's Office. After receiving a call at around 3:50 p.m., Sheriff's Office deputies discovered a 2008 Mazda passenger car had collided with a 2007 Freightliner semi-tractor pulling a trailer in the intersection. The Decatur Ambulance Service transported both occupants of the Mazda to Decatur Memorial Hospital, where the 84-year-old male passenger was pronounced deceased, and the 80-year-old female driver, also from Forsyth, was treated for what are believed to be minor injuries. The 58-year-old male driver of the semi was not injured and refused medical treatment at the scene. The name of the deceased party is not being released at this time, pending notification of family members. His name will be released at a later date by the Macon County Coroner's Office. The names of the other parties involved are also not being released at this time, pending the completion of the investigation. Preliminary investigation by the Sheriff's Office Accident Reconstruction Team indicated the semi was traveling northwest on Illinois 121, while the Mazda was traveling north on Wickles Road. Once the semi entered the intersection, the Mazda collided with the semi between the tractor cab and the trailer. No citations were issued, pending the outcome of the full investigation by the accident reconstruction team. Drugs and or alcohol are not believed to have played a role in the crash. The accident caused the closure of Illinois 121 between Glasgow and Bearsdale Roads, and also Wickles Road between Illinois 121 and Park Road for approximately 2.5 hours. Here's a short article under the education section. The headline reads, "Shelbyville Teachers, Inc. 3-year contract." And this was written by Sharon Barraclough. Teachers in Shelbyville will receive a 2% raise this year, with 1% in each of the next 2 years under a 3-year contract approved by the Shelbyville Board of Education and the Shelbyville Education Association. We're getting this done at the beginning of the new school year, Superintendent Denise Bentz said. Bentz said uncertainty about state funding is affecting Shelbyville's 2017 budget plans, including the $8.2 million education fund that includes teacher salaries. She said Shelbyville is projecting a $36,682 budget deficit at the end of the 2017 fiscal year. Quote, last year we had a $525,000 projected deficit, but ended with a positive balance, she said. Bentz also said Shelbyville schools could benefit from an economic enterprise zone Shelbyville is applying for. State regulations offer property and sales tax incentives for new businesses and new residences in the enterprise zone area. Quote, if a new subdivision is built in the enterprise zone, that means more homeowners, which mean more families, which mean more children, she said. It could have a positive impact for us in the long run. We turn now to page 7 to find out what some of our columnists have to say today. This is the first letter to Abby. Dear Abby, I have been concerned about my parents for some time now. They are elderly and live in a retirement community. They have a very nice home and don't have to worry about money. The problem is they drink every day, sometimes from noon to when they go to bed. Many times their drinking has caused arguments and police visits. When I express my concern about their drinking, they tell me to stay out of it, mind my own business, and they're retired and have earned the right to do whatever they want. Abby, I don't mind them having cocktails every now and then, but this has gotten out of hand. I think they have become alcoholics, and only bad things are coming of it. They refuse to listen to me or anybody else, for that matter. What should I do? Signed, Worried William in New York. Dear William, as people age, their bodies are sometimes less able to metabolize alcohol than they were when they were younger. When things get out of hand to the extent that the police are being called, I agree something must be done. Because there is this level of disruption going on, it follows that the neighbors in that very nice community, retirement community, must be less than thrilled. That your parents drink is only part of the problem. Elderly people can suffer from balance problems even when they are sober. It is common for someone who is inebriated to fall, which could cause your mom or dad to suffer serious injury. If other family members are also worried about your folks, an intervention might be in order. Before attempting one, attend some Al-Anon meetings so you can listen to others' similar experiences and learn how they were handled. And then she gives a website for Al-Anon and alateen.org. The second letter involves phone etiquette. Dear Abby, I went out to dinner with a close friend last night. During the hour we were at the restaurant, she made and received no less than 11 cell phone calls. These were entire conversations, not unanswered rings or a quick, I'm busy now, call you later. If there had been extenuating circumstances, maybe I wouldn't feel so offended, But the chats were with a coworker, someone from church, her boyfriend, her daughter, etc. This friend does not live on her phone, but this was excessive, This friend does live on her phone, but this was excessive even for her. I thought it was ridiculous, and next time I may be too busy to meet her for dinner. Should I say something or just avoid or limit meals with her in the future? Signed, Put on Hold in Texas. Dear Put on Hold, tell your friend that you were very hurt by her lack of consideration at dinner because you had looked forward to spending some time with her, not listening secondhand to her 11 conversations. Her behavior that night was thoughtless and rude, and she owes you an apology. One more short letter. Dear Abby, should stepchildren and their offspring be recorded in your family Bible? Signed, Keeper of the Family Bible. Dear Keeper, yes, if they are considered members of the family. The headline for Mary Hunt's article is this: Make the Shift to Living on Cash. Banks and retailers have benefited greatly the past few decades by promoting a cashless lifestyle. They convinced us that it's safer and more convenient to carry plastic. They declared cash old-fashioned and clunky, and plastic hip and cool. We gradually fell for the pitch and eventually got more than we bargained for. Going cashless has turned us into a debt-ridden society. But things are changing on the consumer front, and cash is making a comeback. Some of my readers, like Martin B., are using cash to avoid dealing with credit card companies, collection agencies, and so forth. Susan J. and her husband wrote that they closed their credit card accounts because of past problems with overdraft charges and identity theft. Others, like Bill and Jan W., are using money orders to pay bills. They cash their paychecks at their company credit union because it doesn't charge a high fee like check cashing stores do. These readers are switching to cash for specific reasons, but there's another reason individuals are shifting to a cash lifestyle, and it's perhaps more noble than any other: to reduce spending and increase savings. Countless studies prove that you will spend more if you pay with plastic, anywhere between 30 and 200% more, depending on the study. It's a lot easier to make unplanned purchases when you pay with plastic, whereas cash is a fixed amount, so you simply cannot spend more than you have. Making the shift from plastic to cash doesn't necessarily mean closing your credit accounts. It means only using cash for your day-to-day spending. It means planning ahead, shopping with a list, paying attention to prices, and making purchase choices according to the amount of cash you have at the time, which can be tough. You need a variety of active credit accounts to maintain an excellent credit score, but you don't have to use them on a daily basis. There are so many benefits to getting out of a plastic mindset. You will practice discipline, accountability, and responsibility, and you will learn to accept delayed gratification. Here's a simple way to get out of the plastic mindset. Get a stack of envelopes and label each of them with a spending category. such as food, gas, dry cleaning, etc. Cash your next paycheck and deposit some of it into your account, just enough to cover bills you pay online or with checks. Then divvy up the cash between the envelopes. Leave your credit card at home and take your envelopes with you. Once an envelope is empty, that means no more spending in that category until the next fill up. At first, you'll feel as if you've jumped into the deep end of the pool without your water wings. Just take it one day at a time, and you'll eventually adjust and feel free. From the A3 Briefs column, we have this article, Running Suspect Arrested. Police say a wanted Decatur man kept running from them, even as a squad car pulled up alongside him and told him to stop. The 30-year-old suspect was wanted for violating an order of protection, according to sworn statements, when he fled from a patrol officer at 5:30 p.m. Sunday in the 2100 block of North Oakland Avenue. The suspect ran westbound on West Ravinia Park Road, police allege, and kept running even as the patrol car, lights flashing, pulled up alongside him and the officer yelled repeatedly for him to stop running. The suspect then got stuck in some heavy brush off a driveway and was apprehended, according to the statements. It's alleged the suspect was in possession of 1.6 grams of methamphetamine and also possessed other illegal drugs in pill form. He was booked for drug possession and resisting police. Not related to any article, we find a photograph by Jim Bowling of a young man in a park skying very high to do a dunk in a basketball court. The headline reads, Finneak Jones practices dunks in between pickup games with Neil Jordan and Soprano Scuggs during an afternoon of basketball at Fairview Park on Monday. The background is a beautiful scenery of numerous trees that are located in the park. It was a sunny day. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the August 23rd issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.